everyone. I hope you're all doing well. It's March, and spring is around the corner, thankfully. I just looked at my calendar to check when we changed the clocks back, knowing full well that it's this weekend and hoping for some reason that that would change. It's like looking in the refrigerator for that last slice of pizza from the night before, knowing full well the kids already ate it, or it was left out overnight, so it's no good, or the dog licked it. You know the answer, but you hope it's not true. But it's not there, and neither is the hour that we lose this weekend while we're asleep. Losing an hour of sleep. It's the dark reality of adulthood. But as our guest alludes to, it's what you make it. You can't control it. But you can manipulate your attitude to adapt to overcome challenges. And it starts with you. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Andy Sinclair, and this is episode 70 of the Maniac Radio Show. Today's subject matter expert is someone I've known almost my entire career. He's a hard charger and shows no signs of slowing down. He's an expert in his craft, or crafts, plural. He's highly regarded within the Security Forces Squadron and the first person in a long time to be nominated for this podcast by a junior member. That's right. Someone he supervises asked me to have him on. Why? Because he's a good supervisor, a good friend, a good wingman? I'll let you decide. Let's bring him on. Master Sergeant CJ Ewer. Give us a quick introduction of who you are and what your position is out here.
I am Master Sergeant Ewer, and I am a flight chief at Security Forces. I came over from the Army into Security Forces in 2008.
Wow. So yeah, 18 years. And how many years did you have with the Army? You were Mountain Company, right?
In Brewer? Yep, Mountain Company in Brewer. I did 4 years. I joined the Army in 2004. And then at the end of the contract, came over here in 2008.
When you came over, were there skills that you learned in the Army, specifically the Mountain Company, that you were able to bring with you to Security Forces? And how did that kind of translate?
Teamwork. Bringing that over was, I think, having that mindset ahead of time at the level that I had. I think really made a difference in the transition.
Yeah, I remember meeting you. I joined in 07. And then I think I saw you down at the gate, and I was like, man, who is this guy? He doesn't smile. He doesn't have like any kind of emotion. And I remember talking about it with you later on in Iraq. I remember saying, hey, how come you don't smile? And you said, because it keeps people away from me and having unwanted conversations.
Like, that doesn't sound like something I would say.
That is super smart. That's a great... Yeah, it doesn't translate well into public affairs, but maybe in security forces it does a little bit. So that's awesome. So you are a flight chief now. So you're doing normal security operations, airbase, ground defense type stuff. You're also a Raven, though.
Phoenix Raven program, yeah.
What does that entail?
So one of the reasons I left the Army to come over to the Air Force is because I met some people that clued me in on the Raven program. And as soon as I learned about it, I knew 100% that that's exactly what I wanted to do. So what the Phoenix Raven program consists of is you get 3 or 6 man teams that go to locations around the world in austere environments where security isn't up to what we need or security is unknown. Places where like C-17s or C-5s would land and do their business. And then, so we would take Raven teams and set up security for them while they do their thing in these austere locations, and then come back.
That's cool. So it's kind of like what Security Forces does, you know, in general, just brought to a higher level and like you said, more austere environments and taking what you've learned at a base level in Security Forces and kind of amplifying it. That's what it sounds like to me, whether that be, you know, aircraft security or you guys do personnel security. I mean, at one point you did.
Over the years, I've done some things that are kind of out of the ordinary for Ravens just because I've been doing it for so long. But typically it is aircraft security, definitely DoD assets and personnel. There was one mission in Africa where we had written permission from the embassy and the local government to take our weapons with us everywhere we went because it was such a rough area. And we did route security from the hotel back to the airfield. Just because it was so, sketchy.
Wow. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. And I feel like a lot of people don't realize, especially in the Guard, the rest of the Air Force, enterprise wide, may not understand that or even know that. 95% of the base, airmen that come through the gate, that's kind of what they see. They see these young airmen that are checking IDs and maybe doing vehicle inspections. And in their mind, that's because that's all they see. That's all they know for security forces. And to have these, other programs within the career field that allow you the opportunity to go to certain places and do certain things and maybe leave you with a sense of, I had a direct impact on that current mission, is kind of cool. And I think that was kind of the reason why I wanted to talk today was kind of briefly, go over what the Raven program is and what it's done for you and how you feel about it. So where are some of the places that you've been able to travel and go to?
I've been to every country in Africa. Probably be easier to tell you where I haven't been.
Yeah, I'm sure. Has it been, overall, has it been a rewarding or successful experience for you?
Oh, it's been amazing. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, it's really the highlight of my career is what I do with the Raven program. And not all of it's fun. Not all of it's Gucci. We were on a C-17 in Chad at one point that hard broke, and we were on the flight line for 7 straight days in 116 degree heat, just making sure nobody came near that plane. So I think the best part about the Raven program is that it's the ultimate adventure. Like once you get out the door and you get onto the mission, you never know where you're going to go, what you're going to do, or what's going to happen next.
So I guess I never realized that was that was the sole purpose why you cross trained over from the Army, was you kind of heard what the Raven program was and you're like, oh, that sounds cool. That's what I want to do. Yep. So there was no doubt when you started talking to our recruiters or our retention guys back in 08, that security was what you wanted to do.
Correct.
Was there any kind of convincing you? Like, were they, hey, you should really go try being an electrician or a medic?
Never even crossed my mind.
Yeah. They probably took one look at you and was like, yeah, he's going to security. Yeah. This guy is, it goes back to the whole, I'm not going to smile. It keeps people away from me type thing. So when you would travel all over the continent of Africa, were you staged in one place and kind of going out and about, or was it like where you go is where you camp type thing?
It depends on the mission. It was a joint operation with all the special forces units in all the partnering countries. We would escort the C-130s to all the different airfields that the special forces were going to do their missions.
Yeah, that seems pretty high profile. So when they make a movie about you someday, who's going to play you?
Just me.
Just you.
Or John Cena. Haven't decided yet.
Do your own stunts. What's the Raven program look like now? Is it like, is there a certain amount of people that's allotted for each base that has a security forces squadron, or do some bases not even have it at all? Like, how does that work?
Some bases don't have any. We have 2 new Ravens. We have Tyler Beam and Philip Slick as our newest Ravens. And unfortunately, we are losing Doug Connolly, which is a big hit because he's been a huge proponent and a huge asset to the program. So that's a big hit. But yeah, we're getting new Ravens. We don't have a lot. The school dates are hard to come by. The school's hard to get through. So we got to fight for the slots that we do get. And we're lucky if we get one a year, really.
Do they tend to give those slots to wings with different airframes, or does it really matter? It does.
So guard units with like C-17s or that specifically have the mission that is required for them usually gets priority.
Interesting.
And then bases like us where we don't have the airframe that really requires Ravens, then they'll call on us when they need the additional help.
What's the selection process like with all that? Like, do you guys, is there a different PT test?
So you have to be 90% in every category of your PT test. And a lot of it is just leadership observation. I mean, you have to be able to look at somebody and understand that type of stress. Like, how are they going to react to that type of stress? Because you're not going to face stress like that in any other situation except for Raven School and then Raven Missions. So, I mean, if I have somebody who is going to get put under that kind of stress and just freak out, then I need to be able to try to read that personality ahead of time because I don't want somebody in that situation, you know?
Yeah. Is the school rigorous? You know, is it a physically or mentally or both challenge?
Yes, absolutely both. So going to Raven School, I had come over from the infantry in the Army. I was a college wrestler. Physical fitness was kind of my lifestyle. And then when I got there, it was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Like, there were days where I was like, I'm not sure I'm going to make this.
Really?
I'm gonna graduate. And I think if we started with 30 people, I think we graduated maybe 14 at the time.
Wow.
So yeah, it was intense.
How long is it?
20 days.
20 days.
It goes back and forth depending on their curriculum at the time, but yeah.
Is it at Fort Dix?
Yep.
It is.
And it is a good combination. Like you'll have a classroom portion where you'll have to learn subjects like verbal judo, like how to de-escalate a situation under an intense amount of pressure. And then you'll apply that into, they call it the HOP, the House of Pain. It's essentially just a wrestling room. So you'll have to run through scenarios. And then if you don't go through the de-escalation and the verbal judo as the instructors see fit, and then now you have to fight for your life.
Oh, wow.
Physically.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And because that's the kind of stuff that you simulate downrange. I mean,
yeah.
Downrange, if you're on a three-man team and you're sitting in Africa and you're looking at an army of people, you don't really know what they're thinking or how they're going to react. Like, do you really want a physical confrontation?
Yeah.
No, you want to be able to make friends, verbally de-escalate the situation, and then you can high five and go about your day. And you also need somebody who can recognize that. Like you don't want somebody boisterous that's going to be up there looking for conflict, because that's going to cause an international incident.
Yeah.
So you need somebody who can handle themselves in those situations, but who have the mentality that that's an absolute last resort, and they can stay cool, calm, and collected under that pressure and de-escalate the situation if needed.
I bet I would imagine. Captain Stevens, I've never worked for him or kind of worked with him. He seems very supportive in the Raven program, and it seems like, I don't know, I've heard through the grapevine that he could be going to Raven school, and that's kind of a big deal, right?
He's incredibly supportive of it. He's probably the only person I met that's as enthusiastic about the Raven program as I am. We are trying to get him to Raven school. It's looking pretty good through some of the communications that we've had with NGB and AMC that he's going to make it there, which would be big for us. I mean, we have a lot of history here with Colonel Franklin, one of our first Ravens, and I mean, he supports it at his level where he's at now, and then to have somebody like Captain Stevens be as enthusiastic about it as he is, and then if he were to make it to the school and then make it through, I mean, that would be history for this base.
That's huge, especially in a squadron like Security Forces, like having top cover, like having leadership and supporter to support what programs are going on, and that may not always be the case. And if you don't have anywhere you go, not just Security Forces, but if you don't have top cover support from your leadership, that can make things very difficult.
So we had to get Colonel Franklin to sign out to bless off on him going. And the email correspondence that I had with Colonel Franklin is asking if we think that we can teach an old dog new tricks, and as far as sending Captain Stevens to the school. And that's kind of the running joke that we have down there now.
Well, like, that's probably answered pretty easily when you have, when you've got a commander who can quite literally run circles around guys half his age, which is awesome. That's huge. That tied in with what you were talking about earlier with the buy-in with the program is probably pretty key. Does he have big plans? Like, when he comes back, has he said anything to you guys and the other Ravens about wanting to get on as many missions as he can, or how's that work?
Oh yeah, he wants to support everything we can possibly. We're always reaching out and trying to get more attention on us here. Conversation that he and I had just the other day was that he wants upwards of 10 or more Ravens here, that would be huge to have those kind of numbers. And it's not just Ravens getting Raven missions. It's really good training. Like, once you get through the school, you have a new appreciation of, I mean, the stuff that you learn at Raven school, we can apply right here doing our jobs every day.
That's cool.
It's just a whole new level of training that we don't get exposed to. But I find it interesting, as enthusiastic as he is about the Raven program right now, having not been through the program, when you go through the school down there and you get exposed to the kind of excellence that they push and the kind of physical fitness and just the whole atmosphere down there just gives you a whole new appreciation to it. So when you come back, like, you're even more motivated. So I'm pretty curious to see how that's going to play out for him.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. Do you think, for anyone listening, they may not know, but he was prior enlisted. He was an E9 before he commissioned, and he was a very highly regarded chief in his craft and in his skill, not just with the command post, but also with the IG. Do you think his exposure to the bigger picture and operating at that strategic level, do you think that has any sway on his opinion or decisions for the Raven program. Like, he gets the bigger picture of what the Ravens do and why they're important.
Yes, 100%. So, I mean, we've had various levels of endorsement. It's kind of ebbed and flowed over the years. And I feel like Captain Stevens has a much broader view of the world as far as how that type of stuff can impact the world. So I 100% think that that's what makes a difference with him.
Our maniacs or airmen that come through the gate, they see you guys at the gate, and then maybe that's all they know, or maybe they see an ECP, an entry control point out to the flight line, and they see that defender, and that's all they know. And I think a lot of career fields out here, you know, not just here, but any Air Force installation, like, no one really knows what everybody does, and to be able to see that. Maybe what's going on behind closed doors or behind the curtain type of thing, and with other various sub programs within a career field is that's always been fascinating to me. And I feel like that should be something that we endorse and kind of promote, because, you know, you had the opportunity to learn about the Raven program while you were still in the Army, and you knew that's what you wanted to do, but not everybody has that same luxury.
Right. Yeah. And going back to that point about, like, people, having the impression of security forces only being gate guards, like, I mean, our gate guards they have one of the most important jobs. They are the first image of what people see when they come onto the base, and they make sure that everybody who comes to work every day is safe. So we do get the stereotype that we're just gate guards. It is an important job, but that's just scratching the surface of what we do. I mean, we have combat arms representatives, we have Ravens, we have people that do the DMO missions. I mean, the list goes on and on as far as, like, the higher speed stuff that we do. And it's really, it's up to you what you make it. I mean, we have guys out here who, that's really all they want to do. Like, they want to come to work every day, they want to be the gate guards, and they love that. And then we have guys that want to excel, and they want to do all the extra stuff, and they want to get the worldwide experience. And if they're willing to do that, then they have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. And maybe they're using that, you know, some of the downtime, being a gate guard on maybe a night shift to take courses and classes and better themselves. And because they are aspiring to do something different.
That's, yeah, 100%. That's awesome. So one of the best things that I've seen from my time in security forces here, I've been here for 18 years, and I've never seen anybody in leadership discourage anybody from taking classes because of work. We 100% will push people to take the classes. And like you said, when you are working 12 hours a day and sometimes you do have downtime, you would be silly to not take advantage of that downtime to better yourself. You could work on your CBTs, you can work on your college courses. I mean, it's just almost too easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we were saying earlier with, you know, seeing the defenders that work the gate, that they, you know, the rest of the base sees that, and that maybe that's what they have in their mind of what security forces does. And, that should never be downplayed, because when crap hits the fan, they are the first line of defense, and they're going to be looking to you guys for that security and for that safety. You know, yeah, it's pretty wild. So you briefly touched on the various programs that our wing has within security forces, the combat arms, the Raven program, the DMO stuff. There are others, though, right? I mean, that there's various schools that you guys can go to, which is pretty awesome. Like, is there still counter sniper school or any of that kind of stuff?
Yes. So actually, we have a designated marksman course, which is kind of in between your basic marksmanship that we do here, and then not quite at the sniper level, but kind of a good in between, just really enhances your ability for the marksmanship type stuff. I mean, the way that the career field's going now towards air-based ground defense, it's a lot of more infantry type tactics, and that's where a lot of the training is going. Like, we have two people going to our combat leaders course down in San Antonio coming up at the end of next month, and that's very infantry based. That's going to be a very hard course. We also have people doing the patrol course, which is incredibly intense. I've heard the patrol course is as hard as or harder than the Raven course, which says a lot. But it's all about land navigation. It's all about doing op orders. It's all about being in that mind frame that you need those infantry skills.
What would you say to, you know, a 17 or 18-year-old high schooler that might be semi-interested in joining security forces? What would you say to them to maybe kind of push them onto your side of the fence? It might be a good nudge if you had like an elevator speech you wanted to give.
I would tell them that this career field is exactly what you make it. Kind of what we touched on before is like, if you want a job or employment and you want to come to work every day and, we have that ability. If you want to excel, if you want to travel the world, then it's really up to you what you make of it. But I mean, the career field is so dynamic that the sky is the limit. It's based on your motivation, really. I mean, like I said before, you could go to school out here full time, easily, you know, and still have time to study here. And then between the courses and the certifications and all the other stuff that we have, if you have a high speed airman or somebody that's intelligent and motivated, there's no limit to what they do.
What's one of the more important things to you as a leader?
I have a good reputation as a flight chief, and that is because I've always put my people first. Like, obviously, completing the mission is a number one priority out here, but to me, a very close second is managing morale and making sure your people know that you're there for them. I mean, your people, they're not going to want to come to work, and they're not going to be fully invested in you if you don't care what happens to them.
What you were saying earlier about working 12-hour shifts, that's probably pretty important because things might get a little mundane or a little monotonous at times, or it might get exciting and over the top and unexpected. And in a situation, you know, or a career field like what you guys have, like that's probably key. Putting people in certain positions where you know their strong suits are gonna, you know, their traits are gonna shine. And maybe when things are a little more mellow, putting people who are uncomfortable in certain situations, putting them in that situation, that way they can become more comfortable with it, especially on deployments, you know, because that's, I've always said it, but when you deploy, people's true colors come out in their personalities, and maybe they're a panicker, maybe they're not, you know, and that's, as a leader, as a flight chief, you probably have to recognize that and make sure that, you know, you wouldn't want to put somebody who avoids confrontation and doesn't like confrontation and into a confrontational situation.
Well, one of the key things about being a supervisor is making sure that you have the right people in the right places. But also you need to balance that with if somebody isn't comfortable doing something, it's my job to develop them and make sure that they are comfortable or become more comfortable doing it so that then we can all depend on each other.
Speaking of job performance and like being capable and highly capable and ready for anything, in your opinion, is it important to maintain physical fitness, you know, in your career field and what you guys do?
You got to incorporate it into your routine. Like, I mean, and you got to find something that you like. That's the two most important things. I mean, if you are dreading going to the gym or doing whatever workout that you choose, then you're not going to stick with it. Like, if you feel like you're going to the dentist's office every time you're trying to work out, you're not going to stick with it. So the important thing is to find something that you like. If you like biking, then bike Monday, Wednesday, Friday at a specific time every week. You know, it's just find something that you would enjoy doing and then stick with the routine. That's the biggest thing.
How much of that is a part of your life and your daily routine?
My entire life, I was 100% devoted to wrestling. And then, I mean, September 11th happened. I was at the University of Southern Maine on the wrestling team. I think at that time as a freshman, I was third in the country. Doing exactly what I wanted to do through high school, you know, and then when September 11th happened, I felt like I needed to do something else given the current circumstances. So I finished out that year, and then that's when I joined the Army. And then I never really lost that desire to wrestle, just kind of ingrained in me, and I followed through with it. I mean, even now into MMA, it's still primarily the reason I do mixed martial arts, is just so I can continue to wrestle and continue to work out. And that's probably 99% of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it probably makes you more confident too. I mean, in your job, right? I mean, that's not to be taken lightly. You got somebody who needs to be, you know, dropped like third period French. You know, I'm not going to call somebody who isn't comfortable with doing that, you know? So knowing, again, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, is knowing strong suits and what people are comfortable with. If I was, you know, say in a leadership role and I needed somebody that I knew I could count on, I would want somebody who's confident and maybe has that wrestling background or MMA background to go handle that situation. I remember specifically, you know, this name probably doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people who are going to listen to this, but I remember in a dojo, I guess is what you'd call it, overseas, I remember watching you fold Larry Estes up like a pretzel, and I thought that was pretty funny. you know, And that's, I think that is extremely important in maintaining that that physical aptitude. But, and we know with that too, you know, going back to what we were saying about leadership, you got to have leadership that supports that. So, you know, taking that, you know, whatever your commander's policy is on fitness, on physical fitness, whether it be 3 hours a week or 5 hours a week while you're working, take full advantage of that, because I don't think everybody does. This is kind of the recruiting pitch for this podcast. That's one of the things that is the beauty about this place, is that they do afford you the time to go to the gym and work out. You know, you can't find that everywhere downtown. And I think that that might be a missed opportunity for, you know, a lot of people who might be, who may shy away from joining out here and being a maniac. But, you know, we have more benefits than just the healthcare and the school benefits. We have, you know, full-time benefits like being able to go to the gym while you're working. With your experience and what you've learned since you've been out here, how does that translate, or can that translate to something in the civilian sector?
I mean, obviously there's a direct correlation between security forces and the civilian law enforcement side. That's a huge resume builder. I mean, we've had people who come to us right out of high school to start building a resume for law enforcement, specifically so they can go into the sheriff's office, or so they can get in eventually to the state police. So that's a direct connection there. But I mean, a step further, if you take the law enforcement piece out, just being able to work under a stressful situation in a team environment, I mean, that'll correlate to hundreds of jobs on the outside. You know, being able to work with people, be respectful under high stress situations. I mean, how many civilian employers wouldn't want that in their environment?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that, because obviously your mind first goes to, like you said, like law enforcement. Like that's like the direct correlation. What are some hardships, some challenges that you experience in your career field?
Being able to be flexible enough to accept the things that you can't change, and to embrace what you can and go from there.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what, you know, Colonel Newell, I've heard him say, focus on what you can control. And I think that's probably key. And, you know, no organization is perfect, and you're going to have challenges. And I think that, you know, career fields like security forces, you have to be, like you said, you have to be ready to adapt and be ready for that overall challenge, because it's going to happen, like, inevitably, no matter where you work, it's going to happen. But the career fields that involve, you know, the career fields that involve directly with first responders, like, that's going to happen, whether it be security forces or maybe a paramedic or a fire department or whatever. But what do you have planned for after the military?
I'm going to buy a cabin in the woods and get a puppy and live happily ever after.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Yeah. Completely off grid.
Yep.
Maybe shut yourself off from the world and let your mind be quiet for a little bit.
Just, I'll need Wi-Fi and a hot tub, and then that's it. I'm good.
Coffee machine. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for coming up to talk. I didn't say this while we were recording, but you were kind of nominated by one of your flight members to come up and talk, because I think that they probably look up to you as a leader and as a senior NCO. And I said, hey, you know, that's actually a pretty good idea. Let's have CJ come up. I've known you for a long time. Clearly this individual thinks highly of you. So, I appreciate you coming up and talking and sharing your military experience and life career choice with us. Not everybody goes through the same path that you did, you know, kind of starting in the army infantry, the mountain company, coming over, knowing exactly what you want to do, not even just a specific AFSC, but like a subdivision of the AFSC, and then actually seeing it through and following through with it. So it's pretty neat.
I am honored that my peers thought that enough of me that this would be a good opportunity to talk about. So I am excited about that. And I mean, to me, it's all about my guys and how they view me, because when I come to work every day, it's all about making sure my guys are taken care of. So, I mean, that's a good sign, I guess.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. You can take it from an outsider. That's a good sign. Well, cool, man. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So there's a lot to unpack there. CJ had a goal and a dream in wrestling. 9/11 happened, and he shifted his priorities. He joined the Army and later cross-trained into the Air Force to become a Phoenix Raven in our Security Forces Squadron, where he has excelled. He knew what he wanted, and he went after it. He adapted and focused on what he could control. He knew where his strong suits were and where to apply his talents. He's the type of guy who looks at things like daylight savings time and says, well, I'm only losing an hour of sleep if I don't go to bed an hour earlier. Drill is coming up. Make the most of it. Get that extra training done and check in with your wingman. Make sure to take the time to ask them how they're doing and really mean it, and ask them how their families are doing. Chief Niedorowski is passing the torch to Chief Poland, who will be our new Wing Command Chief. Congrats to Chief Poland. Chief Niedorowski, we all thank you for your service and everything you've done for us. Truly, you'll be missed. I've known you since I was a little kid, and I'm very happy for both you and Trish. If you're not doing so already, check us out on Facebook and Instagram by searching 101STARW. You can also find all of our previous podcast episodes on Divids, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio by searching the Maniac Radio Show. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Andy Sinclair with the 101st Air Refueling Wing Public Affairs Office. And until next time, so long.